my colleagues, Professor Pugh from Faculty of Education, Rina Zaskis and Peter Lilliedal, and they both teach also in mathematics department. And this seems to be very, very exciting talk at the beginning. So without more introduction, I just give the stage to them.
Okay.
So thank you very much for all of you who are still here. If I was not scheduled here, I would be walking somewhere in Gastown.
First and foremost, I need to do a couple of disclaimers here. Number one is, this is technology. It's not super technical technology, but there is a coordination of various forms of media here and two people on stage. So the chances that something's going to go wrong is high. There's also a large number of cords here, two cups of water, and an elevated surface. So bear with us. First and foremost, this is for your entertainment. We put this together. We actually did a colloquium up at SFU for the Faculty of Education, and it was met with such great success, we decided to take it on the road. So this was our next stop. Vegas is next week. We're Reno the week after that. We've twisted it somewhat, and now it's almost solely for your entertainment. But as structured, there is an undertone of a commentary on sort of the status of the public perception of what mathematics is. And by public, I mean North American public. And we're going to display that through our movie clips. Now, before we run the first one, I offer this question, which incidentally is the title of our talk. Hollywood perceptions of mathematics, cultural truth or mathematical fiction? So, let us begin.
Switch on.
No?
Yes.
She wasn't even aware of her.
I'm great. I'm incredible. Michael, pencil paper.
I was supposed to ask, what perception do we get from it? So is mathematics about fast calculations? Or is being able to do fast calculations is about being smart? At least this is the perception I get from this clip. And this perception is still there. Whenever there is a complicated, interesting numbers restaurant bill, somebody always looks at my direction and, hey, you know something about mathematics. And yes, I am very bad with calculations. It reminds me of an incident that was many years ago, but still it is in my mind. Once upon a time when I was teaching some summer institute in Kent, Ohio, I moved there just for the summer with two kids. One was 4 years old, one was 7 years old, just finished the first grade. And there was an opportunity to enroll the 7 years old in different courses. And since I was doing the enrollment rather late, all the cool courses were already taken. So we got into swimming, and one of the courses that there was still room in this course was called Fun with Math. So that's where I put my child to, Fun with Math. So the afternoon, after the first day of the summer camp, the child returned home, and I asked him, hey, did you really have fun with Math? And he said, yeah. He wasn't sure. So I tried to investigate further on. Finally, I got the correct answer from him. He said, it was fun, but it wasn't actually math. So, hey, I pay good money to enroll my child in fun with math summer camp course, and they are not doing math. So what were you doing? He said, we were doing shapes and patterns, but we were not actually doing math. So he just finished his first grade. Where from was his perception that because of these shapes and patterns and no numbers and no calculations involved, it is not math? Maybe, for sure, this is not a perception from home. No. And it was in 1990, and Matilda came out in 1992 or 3, I think, so it is definitely not from Matilda. So this perception is somewhere there in the air.
I did forget to mention at the beginning that we ask these questions, but we're not going to answer them. We pose the problems but offer no solutions. We leave that for the question period at the end, where we've allotted a generous 3.5 minutes. Any questions that you may have?
And we'll be recording. Any questions?
What's your first name?
My first name is Bob. Shoot, Bob. Right.
Is there a volume control there? Can you
name as many mammals as you can in 60 seconds. Ready?
There's a dial on the front there somewhere.
60 seconds. Well, how would you like that? How about alphabetical? Aardvark, baboon, caribou, dolphin, eel, hippus, fox, gorilla, hyena, ibex, jackal, kangaroo, lion, marmoset, Newfoundland, ocelot, panda, rat, sloth, tiger, unicorn, varmint, whale, yak, zebra. Now, varmint is a stretch, so is Newfoundland. That's a dog breed. Unicorn is mythical, eel, hippus is prehistoric, but you aren't being very specific. Now, where are you, Bob? I'll try to be more specific. Ready for the next one?
Shoot.
Answer as quickly as you can. How old is a person born in 1928?
Man or
woman? Specifics, Bob. Okay, one more time. How old is a man born in 1928?
Still alive?
If a man is born in 1928 and he's still alive, how old is he?
What month?
If a man was born October 3rd, 1928, and he's still alive, how old is he?
What time?
10 o'clock. Where? Anywhere.
Well, let's get specific, Bob. I mean, if the guy's still alive, born in California, October 3rd, 1928, 10 p.m., he's 67 years, 9 months, 22 days, 14 hours, and 12 minutes. If he's born in New York, he's 3 hours older than Edna.
Well, let's get specific, Bob. I mean, if the guy's still alive, blah, 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 blah. So.
Actually, my elementary school teachers have to figure out what day the interview was recorded.
So is mathematics about one correct answer? Mathematics has often been described as a science of precision. And this sort of manifests itself in the math classroom as being all about skills and abilities, skills and facts. But I got to refer to my notes. Sorry. Now, I could argue very clearly that this is not really what it's all about, that mathematical experience is not about skills and facts. But where do they get this perception? Is it only in the movies, or does it exist in the classroom as well? Well, over the last several decades, mathematics has survived constructivism, discovery, learning, hypothesis testing, and so on and so forth. And it's still come out that math is basically about one thing, one answer, one way. So the irony of this is, as hard as we try to make this the case, it just, mathematics itself rails against it. Here's sort of a classic, typical type word problem out of mathematics. Johnny went to the store to buy some groceries for his mom. He bought milk for $2.25, eggs for $1.75, and bread for $1.25. How much money will he need? Well, the answer to the question is he isn't going to need any, because he already went. However, should he go again, he'll need $5.25. And you only need to teach an upper-level course at either university or in high school with a strong English student in there before they start to sort of answer these questions in a smart-aleck way. We just can't help but be ambiguous. Are you ready for the next one?
Let me first put it in this way, the light, otherwise I wouldn't know what to do.
Oh, okay.
Now.
All right, let's begin with another round of questions. How many minutes are there in 48 years?
25,228,800 minutes. 151,368,000 seconds.
That's very good. Ready for another one? How many factors are there in 3,067?
Come on, guys. There are no factors of 3,067. The number's prime.
Another correct answer from David Wells.
Oh, somebody, for God's sake, challenge me.
Okay. How about giving me a number that when divided by the product of its digits, the quotient is 3, and if you were to add 18 to this number, the digits would be inverted. That is correct, David.
Well, that's right, David.
Actually, when I showed this in my class, I was trying to stop the tape. A second before 24 is the answer, and see how long it will take my students to figure out the answer. Of course, it is easy to check that 24 is the answer in this case. Let's look at the question. The question is here. The question is here. So it is easy to verify that this is the answer, but it's not that easy, or a little bit harder to get the answer, and is it the only answer? I thought so until Peter came on board and claimed that 13 is also the answer. So why 13 is also the answer? Somebody from the audience, they can't see you, so yeah. Yes.
It can have or not have a remainder.
It depends. Thank you, Shabnam. It depends how you define the quotient. So if there is a quotient in the remainder, and you look at the quotient only, it is, could be the answer. But this is not the point. Peter promised questions. Thank you, Peter. Peter promised questions after each answer almost. So the question that comes to mind here is mathematical ability a gift? Or when you see this excerpt, what is your immediate reaction? Or not what is your immediate reaction, but what is the reaction of a lay person, a person on the street? What is the reaction? Please react!
Yes.
Well, yes.
It's rare. It's special.
No, not the answer to this question, the reaction to the excerpt, to the video clip we just saw.
That little boy has gone to a higher level of thinking. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reaction is stupid. I'm stupid.
This is your reaction? Okay. Yeah. Any more reactions?
He's probably going to wind up psychotic.
Can't hear you?
He's probably going to wind up psychotic and have all sorts of problems.
Okay. Another reaction that I hear often is, wow. Is it sort of something that I'm around the place? Oh, wow. Isn't it amazing? So let's see really whether or not it is amazing. The answer, the question is, how many minutes are there in 44 years? And these are the answers that are provided. What is your reaction? Something is wrong. Something is wrong by the magnitude. I don't know exactly what the number should be, but these numbers just don't make sense to me. So, if it doesn't make sense to you in the video theater, and you care to wait a couple of months till it is on the video, and actually purchase the video, and rewind the clip several times, and record the number and make the calculation, you get this number. So somebody there messed up a little bit. Or maybe they just put it in, as Peter suggests, as a joke for those who would be interested to calculate. Another thing, let's, if you remember, how many factors are there in 3067. What's your answer?
Two.
Unfortunately, what we learned from this clip is incorrect. So rather than feeling stupid, and rather than saying, wow, this kid is a genius, let's exercise some caution whenever something is presented to us as a gift or as a genius, with something wonderful. Yeah. Am I ready? Oh, I'm good at the next one. Can you put it in the next one?
It's on its way.
On its way, okay. Thank you, Peter.
Yes, that's exactly so. I'm a humbug.
Oh, you're a very bad man.
Oh, no, my dear. I'm a very good man. I'm just a very bad wizard.
Well, what about the heart that you promised Tin Man? What? And the courage that you promised Cowardly Lion?
Well, I'm scared to a brain. Why, anybody can have a brain. That's a very mediocre commodity. Every pusillanimous creature that crawls on the earth or slinks through slimy seas has a brain. Back where I come from, we have universities, seats of great learning, where men go to become great thinkers. And when they come out, they think deep thoughts, and with no more brains than you have. But they have one thing you haven't got, a diploma. Therefore, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Universal Partners Committeeatum e pluribus unum, I hereby confer upon you the honorary degree of Ph.D.
Ph.D.?
That's Doctor of Thinkology.
Sum of the square roots of any two sides of an isosceles triangle is equal to the square root of the remaining side.
Oh, John, Rachel, I've got a brain! How can I ever thank you enough?
Brain. I got a brain. So this is the question I would like to put to you. Is mathematics about having a brain? And is there a math gene? Is it either we have it or we don't have it, or is there something to learn? It is a question Peter promised we give no answers. But let's look at more detail at the brain. The brain says this. I rest my case, but maybe that's the problem for those, all those who are coming to calculus. They watch too much Wizard of Oz. What Bernice called earlier, learned disability? Could be.
So, what are you guys going to do with your share?
How much is my share?
Well, I figure it's got to be 2 million, right? I'm counting the jewelry in there, too.
Well, then, divided it 4 ways, that's a half million bucks apiece.
So what about Frenchie?
What about Frenchie? She's just a friend.
Yeah, but without Frenchie, we're dead.
Come on, we can get her brought to sell cookies, jeez.
All right, you know what I say? She gets a share, but not a full share.
I'd go for that. Yeah, what if we each get a fourth and she gets like a third?
She'd be getting more than us.
How you figure?
I said, where are you going to get 4/4 and a third? Can't you add?
I don't do fractions, all right? Because remember that movie with Humphrey?
So is mathematics or these fractions to be avoided? It seems we live in a society where illiteracy is something that people are ashamed of. Yet, innumeracy is not something that they're ashamed of. In fact, they flaunt it openly. There's nothing wrong with not knowing your numbers. Fractions is a particular point. Now, where does this come from? They don't know their fractions. Is it simply a Hollywood perception? Fractions, we teach it. Every year we teach it, and in the end, they don't know. It's the one topic that they hate more than anything else. And ironically, it's also the topic we spend more time on if you were to base it on percentages and across the curriculum. But fraction isn't the only victim or culprit. It's number sense in general. And it's the avoidance and the pride in the avoidance of it. Recent case in point. Well, it's not that recent, but it's one of my favorite anecdotes. Popular hamburger franchise was giving away prizes. A little skill testing question at the bottom of the contest card. What was it? An order of operation. Now, order of operation questions. The answer is always the year when you're at these hamburger places. But the ironic thing was, I knew what the answer was, but I had absolutely no confidence that the people who would be checking it knew what the answer was. So I went out to the counter with the ticket in hand, and I sit, and I kind of like, I'm not sure if it's the right answer. She looked at it and goes, oh yeah, that's one of them. What do you mean, that's one of them? Well, there's actually two correct answers, and this is one of them. So they decided they were covering their bases. Now, you'd think that I'd be upset by this, but actually it's sort of enlightening to know that at least someone, somewhere in the hierarchy of the franchise, there is one person, at least, who has the common sense to know that there is an alternate, if not necessarily correct, or vice versa way of doing it.
Okay, now we will reverse the order. Rather than first of all showing the clip and then putting on the question, I will put on the clip and then I'll ask you, this clip answers what question? Okay, so now I'm putting the clip. And actually one day we'll have it all nicely on CD that we'll be able to go back and forth and play and not do this dance, but it will take more advanced technology that we're familiar with now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
we progress from just the overhead though.
Here it comes.
So, Wilson, we were en route for Memphis for 11 and a half hours. 75 miles an hour, so they think that we are right here, but we went out of radio contact, then flew around that storm for about an hour, so that's a distance of, what, 400 miles? 400 miles squared, that's 160,000 times pi, 3.1. 502,004. This is a search area of 500,000 square miles. It's twice the size of Texas. And they never find us.
Assignment before the clip. This movie clip is the answer to what question?
How does math help you?
We're getting close. Any other, or it is very good, any other ideas, any other variations?
Do you need math to survive?
Very good. Any other ideas, variations? Please?
I think I give you answers that can be very discouraging. Your
life. Yes. let me help you.
Sorry, but it is not a question.
Let me help you. You just introduced rational expressions. You're about two lessons into it, and a student from the back of the class goes, and what are they at?
I'm going to use this.
So. And what the message do I get from it? That only in very critical and maybe life-threatening situations we need to use mathematics. And if you are wondering, and if you already have discovered my perversion to look at wrong answers in the movies, this one is correct. If you indeed take pi as 3.14, if you believe that that's the value of pi, the answer is the calculation is correct. And also the formula that is being used, which is by the third. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, Peter, you're doing so well.
Do you want this one?
In a second. I want this one, but in a second. Yes, thank you very much, Kendall. Where are you? Where are you?
Back here.
This is the transparency that we borrowed from Kendall. You have seen it before. But so it talks not only about critical situations, life-threatening situations, but maybe afterlife situations. Don't think that if you're out of the life-threatening situation, you may never use it again.
We're running an extra video clip. This is going to cut into your question period.
Is it?
Yeah, it's in.
Levin, what do you do in school?
Math.
What can we mean?
Shh.
I'm 49.
It seems like if any of these numbers are prime, then the ring is trapped. Okay, 645. That's not prime. 472. No. 649. Right, 11 times 59. It's not prime either. So that ring is safe.
You make that assumption based on one prime number trap.
I'm not. The incinerator thing was prime. 083. The molecular chemical thingy had 137. The acid ring had 149.
You remember all that in your head?
I have a facility for it.
Levin. You beautiful brain. Okay, out of the way.
Right, poor beauty.
Field goal for the blonde.
We belong to each other. Not a single one of us is going to get her. So then we go for her friends. But they will all give us the cold shoulder because nobody likes to be second choice. But what if no one goes for the blonde? We don't get in each other's way. And we don't insult the other girls. That's the only way we win.
So what's the question? Probability? It's my favorite topic, for those of you who know me. It's mathematics about sudden illumination. So often Hollywood perception of mathematics and mathematicians in particular, other than being rumpled old men who smell funny and mutter to themselves when they walk, is that mathematics being a gift comes in sudden illumination. So how does this manifest itself in the classroom? Well, to see this, we have to look at it in two ways. One is that illumination can mean fast answer. Now, I don't mean fast calculation, that ability that Rena talked about earlier, but fast answer. I don't think I'm surprising anyone by saying that students generally feel that if a problem can't be solved in 3 to 5 minutes, it's unsolvable for them. They tend to have this, and I may be actually being generous with the 3 to 5 minutes. They tend to think that it has to come quickly or it's not going to come at all. The other one is that some problems in mathematics can't be solved without illumination. Now, although that I would argue that that is true, the way we portray this in the mathematics classroom is through our favorite trick questions, which can't be solved without illumination, but really, you can't make any headway without illumination. Case in point, here's an example, a very common problem. We've all seen this one. Connect 9 dots with 4 lines. Now, I'm kind of violating one of my theories by putting this question in here or not. I have this theory that any talk or book that has this problem in it as an example of anything is bad. Well, that may be the case, but
you don't keep the question, you need all the answers.
Yeah, that's because everyone knows the question. You can't solve this without illumination, and this is sort of the classic trick question that math teachers love to spring on their students. There is absolutely no headway made until they get their illumination, and then that's it. It delivers the answer completely. That is sort of the essence of a trick question. Okay, are we done? Can we go on one more? No, we have one more. Oh, you need light? This is the last one, so enjoy.
So, it is down to you, and it is down to me. If you wish you're dead, by all means, keep moving forward.
Let me explain.
There's nothing to explain. You're trying to kidnap what I've rightfully stolen.
Perhaps an arrangement could be reached?
There will be no arrangement. And you're killing her.
But if there can be no arrangement, then we are at an impasse.
I'm afraid so. I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
You're that smart.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
Really? In that case, I challenge you to a battle of wits.
For the princess? To the death? I accept.
Good. Then pour the wine. Inhale this, but do not touch. I smell nothing. What you do not smell is called iocane powder. It is odorless, tasteless, dissolves instantly in liquid, and is among the more deadly poisons known to man. Decide, and we both drink and find out who is right and who is dead.
But it's so simple. All I have to do is divine from what I know of you. Are you the sort of man who would put the poison into his own goblet or his enemy's? Now, a clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool. You would have counted on it, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You made your decision then?
Not remotely. Because iocane comes from Australia, as everyone knows. And Australia is entirely peopled with criminals. And criminals are used to having people not trust them, as you are not trusted by me, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going! Where was I?
Australia.
Yes, Australia. And you must have suspected I would have known the powder's origin, so I could clearly not choose the wine in front of you.
You're just stalling.
You'd like to think that, wouldn't you? You've beaten my giant, which means you're exceptionally strong. So you could have put the poison in your own goblet, trusting on your strength to save you, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you've also bested my Spaniard, which means you must have studied. And in studying, you must have learned that man is mortal. So you would have put the poison as far from yourself as possible, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You're trying to trick me into giving away something. What work?
It has worked. You've given everything away. I know where the poison is.
Then make your choice.
I will. And I choose. What in the world can that be?
What? Well, I don't see anything.
I saw something. No matter.
What's so funny?
I'll tell you in a minute. First, let's drink. Me from my glass, and you from yours.
You guessed wrong.
You only think I guessed wrong. That's what's so funny. I switched glasses when your back was turned. Ha ha, you fool. You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia. But only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Generalizations of very little examples, But here we are generalizing by many examples of Hollywood perceptions of mathematics. So what can we change? Are these examples, how are they connected to our culture? Are they those who are forming the culture? Are those examples, are those who are changing the culture? Are they reflecting the culture? And as Peter said earlier, we're not going to answer this. Peter?
I am willing to offer one hint to an answer, though, to this final question. But it really doesn't solve anything. But that is that I'm willing to bet that changing one won't necessarily change the other. We've tried to display some of the cultural perceptions that exist within North America through the movie excerpts, and it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. And it's humorous and it's entertaining. But we've also tried to illustrate how these same perceptions can grow out of the very classrooms that exist within the schools that we are in, if not the very classrooms that we teach. And I'm not so sure that simply changing teacher practice or curriculum or so on will change perception. A student who has a positive mathematical experience, I believe, can still be influenced by Hollywood and the public media as to what mathematics is about for the rest of their lives. So the question is, can we solve the problem simply by hiring better consultants for mathematics, or for movies, math consultants for movies? Or can we solve it by the somewhat simpler case of improving instruction across North America? I don't know. Do we have to do both? Will one suffice? Will neither suffice? So I guess that's our final question.
Maybe just inserting a word with the final excerpt. I want to believe that it is also, some of it is mathematics. And I hope that this, some of this kind of mathematics that I refer to deduction and logical reasoning, not necessarily presented in humorous fashion, makes it to our classroom a little bit more. Classrooms a little bit more than it is now. So it is a wishful thinking.
Now, I should insert one little caveat. There is reason to believe that some of the stuff that they put in movies is there for a reason. I've heard from more than one source that the mistakes that are in the movies, mathematical mistakes, are sometimes placed there intentionally as jokes placed by the mathematicians who are hired to consult for these movies. Case in point, I've been told that the movie Good Will Hunting, mm-hmm. that the Fields Medal would never be awarded in the area that it was awarded in. So, and that apparently was placed there intentionally as a joke by the person who was hired to consult for the movie. Okay, so we have, as I promised, 3.5 minutes for questions. Oh no, 5.5 minutes, we'll talk slow.
Actually, just regarding Good Will Hunting, their mathematical consultant was here. What was his name? John Meisman?
Yes.
He was here and he told me that he was fired from being mathematical consultant. And he stayed there. So there are mathematical problems in Good Will Hunting, but the reason is that he was fired halfway through consulting them. And that's why they have so many mathematical problems in the Good Will Hunting movie. So that was one thing I heard.
It's not all bad. You've seen, just you mentioned putting mathematical errors deliberately into films. There's a film way back, about 20, 25 years ago, called Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother with Gene Wilder.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember Sherlock Holmes...
Younger, like your brother, wasn't he?
I don't think that's a good name. He has an archenemy, Professor Moriarty, who's a professor of mathematics, who, it is said, Conan Doyle says, wrote a treatise on the binomial theorem, 1850 or something like that. Everything was known about the binomial theorem by 1700. But at one point, the camera pans around Moriarty's studio, and there on the blackboard are several botched attempts at proving the binomial theorem is A plus B to the N equals A to the N plus B to the N. It's crossed out. So there was something that knew what they were doing.
But they were good enough to recognize.
That's right. I was there with my master's thesis advisor. We were the only people in the audience who laughed.
Yes, just a question. You said you will have the clips all on one CD.
reach
at
over.
At some point?
We will, but we're not able to distribute it.
It is our hope, but here we have done illegal act because
right.
those videos from a private collection and they're not for public distribution, for public presentation, but it depends on how we define
but there is someone
public
at SFU.
Presentation. I define part of a clip as legal.
There is someone at SFU right now working on a copyright release for these movies.
I would like to, as a teacher, I would like to use those films to show
how
kids, which is
sell this
which is
for $1,000 each.
I don't cover any lawsuits.
Social studies teachers use this kind of historical material to make points to kids about you know, the Second World War. Yeah, propaganda films and things like that. And it would just be nice for math teachers to be able to use.
Well, as Peter said, somebody's working on getting a copyright.
We're not joking, because when we did it at the colloquium, it was taped and it was prepared, but we can't be released until the copyright's approved.
You should just all do it. We'll just be
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Karen.
There was a lady doing a Cindy, what's her name? Cindy, at SFU, she did interesting perceptions and pre-service teachers. I forget the last name. Rogers, Cindy Rogers. And she did a very interesting thing on perception of children. Again, younger children. It was in a grade 2 classroom, something that parrots what you mentioned with your son. And she got them to draw pictures as she was subbing in this one class of what a mathematics teacher would look like. And it was horrendous. I mean, I'm looking through these things. Because you could see, again, these children had preconceived notions of what the people who were helping them navigate through this discipline were going to be. And they were horrific. They were awful people. You could tell by their little stick drawings, and they'd have swords and beady eyes, and, you know, there was some sexism there, because a lot of them were men. But it was very interesting and illuminating, if you'd have, that it's more than, I think, these images that we get from media. And I wonder how much we serve to reinforce those images, even today, in how we talk to children about the concepts that we're teaching. Not because we come into it as this sort of professional, whether we have beady eyes or not. And so a lot of what we do can actually reinforce the Hollywood perceptions and these other perceptions that their parents and brothers things have. Has anybody, have you?
I've actually seen a study like that published in PME one time. You got to ask yourself, at grade 2 they have these perceptions, where do they come from? So if not from the classroom, because it's impossible that they can come from the classroom at this point. There's the only two choices are media and the home. And how much is the home influenced by the media?
But the perception isn't there. When I submitted my application to become a mathematics teacher, a person who received my application said, but why? You look okay.
I didn't have the same response.
But a lot of parents have some pretty negative experiences with math as well. And then at first they'll come in and say, well, I wasn't very good at math either. I can't help anything.
Which begs the question, the last question, is are the movies representing reality or are they creating it? So it's... It's a viable... As much as I rail against this idea that this is truly what mathematics is, it is a consistent and viable discourse that exists very well in society. Society doesn't grind to a halt because of this perception. Everyone has this shared perception. Everything goes on. Everyone sort of works well. They can converse about this, and it all seems to fit. It's not real. It's just wild.
I suggest that it has to do with peer pressure from any similar subject that appears that the person who excels in that subject usually is a technical, detailed, not everyone knows type of subject. So math is one example, but it can be anything, any subject. And when that happens, then peers view that person differently, and then there's all sorts of these images that come into it. So it's math is an example of that that happens. And the worst part of this, you know, the images are perfectly fine and innocent, except for when it comes to influencing children in the younger ages against such subjects. Yeah.
That's a good comment. There's really no response to that.
I was just going to say, we all feed into that wow factor because somebody's bragging about their kid doing well in all these math contests and stuff, you know, or somebody's saying, I've done this, and that. I think, wow, you're really smart. I think, what do you say? Why are we feeding into this for? Somebody says, yeah, I wrote something and I won $100 for an essay, maybe a 13-year-old. You're like, yeah, well, they can write. They're supposed to be able to write. There's not as big as a wow factor there, I think, for the general public.
Yeah, there's going along with that. I think one way of looking at this is to compare mathematics with subjects which don't have this aura of mysticism about them, such as English or history, which seem to be, although they're not, they seem to be more accessible than mathematics. You know, as Buffy the Vampire Slayer says when she's faced with an English exam, you get points for speaking it, right? And so it seems to be, you know, everybody speaks English, so it seems to be much easier. And you can write an English essay, and it's, you know, neither right nor wrong. You get marks for it. Whereas in mathematics, you get it right or wrong. So that imbues this thing about...
Which is an interesting perception in its own right. Because I don't think very many math teachers, at least in this room, would mark a question right or wrong.
No, that's true. But the thing about English is that there is such a thing as standards in English, only they're not quite as obvious as the ones in math.
Well, they're not as tempting.
Right.
We'll take two more comments and your questions. Like I said, we got to take the show on the road.
I think it has to do with
passion.
With a reptile brain, math is too much here, you know, we're and this part of the brain is an evolutionary latecomer. We're not in love with it. And so, but every time I meet somebody who says that they like mathematics, they say, I had a wonderful teacher in grade 8, a wonderful teacher in grade 10. So this teacher was able to ignite the cognitive libido.
One more.
I know this so.
Okay, I think from this second, I want to thank all of you for being here this afternoon and thank you.